Well, we're continuing our series in the book of Psalms, so please come with me to Psalm 32, the reading which we had. Now, David Cameron has announced that he wants to measure the nation's well-being, a happiness survey. And I'm told questions are expected to focus on marriage, friendships, and health. And, of course, the most basic question, whether or not you feel happy. And already there are some sample questions. I hope you're feeling excited. Hold your breath. These are all things you're going to be asked, right? And you're supposed to rate your answers on a scale of 1 to 10. All right? Overall, how satisfied are you with life nowadays? Overall, how happy did you feel yesterday? Overall, how anxious did you feel yesterday? And overall, to what extent do you feel the things that you do in your life are worthwhile? But I bet there won't be any questions like this. Have you been forgiven by God? Has your sin been sorted out? Will you be acquitted on the day of judgment? Because when it comes to real happiness, another David tells us that these are the questions to ask. Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. Now, did you hear that? That word, we've come across it before in the Psalms. Blessed, happy. Happy is he. So do you want to be happy? We spend our lives, don't we, looking for happiness in our heart of hearts. We don't desire anything else. But where is happiness to be found? And David answers, happiness is to be found in being forgiven by God. And he should know. And there are 3 points. Point number one, real happiness. Now, David is king of Israel. He's the man who writes, the Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want. But David has now changed. He's living far from God. You may like to turn with me to 2 Samuel chapter 11. Don't worry if you don't know where it is. You can just listen. But 2 Samuel chapter 11 verse 1, we read this. It happened in the spring of the year, at the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him, and all Israel, and they destroyed the people of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David remained at Jerusalem. When David should have been out serving the Lord, he's freewheeling downhill. Verse 2, then it happened one evening that David arose from his bed. So when he should have been busy doing what God had given him to do, he's been dossing in bed, accountable to no one, and very probably feeling bored. So he takes a little walk on the palace roof. And for the first time today, maybe the first time for a long time, excitement. Verse 2, and from the roof he saw a woman bathing. And the woman was very beautiful to behold. And in that moment, David forgets God. He becomes an idolater. He's thinking to himself, what will make me happy? Pleasing God or pleasing myself? And he does his arithmetic. What do I want? And he comes up with his answer. Verse 3, so David sent and inquired about the woman. And someone said, is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah, the Hittite? She's a married woman. She belongs to another man. But in that moment, David wants Bathsheba more than he wants God's will. His universe becomes one woman. His universe becomes one body shape. That's all he wants. Then David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her. For she was cleansed from her impurity, and she returned to her house. The action is quick, isn't it? He sees, he sends, he takes, has sex, she goes. No love, no affection, no tenderness, no words, no relationship. It's just lust and adultery. Well, Bathsheba conceives. Her husband is at the front, fighting for his country. So David, to cover his tracks, arranges for Uriah, her husband, to be murdered. The woman mourns. David marries her. The birth of the child is legitimized. And David's dirty secret is safe. Or is it? There are at least two witnesses: David's conscience and God himself. And neither remain silent. And that is where we come to as we look together at Psalm 32. Of what is David guilty? Well, Psalm 32, verses 1 and 2 tell us. Three words. David is guilty of transgression, sin, iniquity. David is guilty of transgression. He sees Bathsheba. And when he sees Bathsheba, God erects a sign. He says, David, this way, not that way. Do not commit adultery. But as David looks at it, he says, no chance. God's way leads nowhere. I'm going my way. And when he sends for Bathsheba, there's still time. David, this way. But David says, I'm going my way. And when he contemplates the murder of a decent man, David, this way. Do not commit murder. Thus says David, I am going my way. Transgression. And David's guilty of sin. The word means falling short, missing the mark. What's the maximum score in darts? 180. But if you score less, you've fallen short. You've missed the mark. Nothing wrong with the target. And there's nothing wrong with God's target. Love me with all your heart. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. But what does David do? He takes another man's wife, and ultimately he takes that man's life. Sin. And David is guilty of iniquity. It means to bend double. Think of the U-shaped bend on your lavatory. Every time you flush the loo, think iniquity. It means not being straight. Not being straight with God. Does David give God a straight answer? So David is characterized by those three words. That's what he did. There was transgression. He went his own way. There was sin. He fell short. There was iniquity. Something twisted, corrupt. What says David? Some people, verse 1, have had their transgressions forgiven. And the sense of it is, the weight has been lifted from them. And some people, verse 1, have had their sin covered. Not a cover-up. The sense is the matter's been dealt with. God's not going to bring it up. And some, verse 2, though guilty of iniquity, they've had the charges dropped. And far from being condemned, God says, you're free to go. So says David, real happiness. Where is it to be found? Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity. Says David, that's real happiness. And says David, liar, adulterer, murderer, I know what I am talking about. My friend, do you know what he's talking about? Let's come to point number 2. Putting it right. Now, if David is guilty of such a shocking and wretched catalogue of sin, how did it get put right? Well, look at verses 3 to 5. For at least 9 months, David lives in denial. Oh, I'm sure he still reads his Bible, still goes to church, maybe even leads the people in prayer. But there's no communion with God. And during those months, this is how David describes his experience. He describes it in three ways. Look at verse 3. When I kept silence, my bones grew old through my groaning all the day long. Are there any arthritis sufferers? Have your bones grown old? So every step is painful. You know, when you get into a chair and it's, oh, and then get out of a chair. It's painful. Well, David is suffering from spiritual arthritis. He sighs and groans his way through every day. Nothing seems to be right. Nothing dulls the pain. Verse 4, for day and night your hand was heavy upon me. And years ago he went on an outdoor pursuits course in Brecon. And myself about 8 o'clock in the morning with these great big packs on our backs. And as we climbed and climbed, and as the sun blazed down, so my pack grew heavier and heavier and heavier, until I would have given anything to be able to put my pack down. And David is exhausted under this ever-growing weight and burden of his guilt. And he cannot put it down. When I kept silent, he says. And verse 4, my vitality was turned into the drought of summer. Friends of ours, they live in Oz, Perth, and in the winter time, when the rains come, their paddock which surrounds their house is like a carpet of green, luscious grass. But in the summer drought, it's brown and tinder dry. It's as though the very life has been sucked out of it. David is not the man that he was. The life has been sucked out of him. There's a fire in his conscience, and the fire is burning in his bones. He's a man drained of life. Well, my friend, you know what David is talking about? What are you like when you're in pain? Are you ratty? Do you groan? Find yourself getting angry and irritated and cross over little things. When you're in pain, do you find it easy to blame others? Well, maybe it's spiritual arthritis that you've got. And the anger and the irritation and the frustration and the looking sideways are symptomatic of something much, much more. When I kept silent, my bones grew old. And actually, the only one to blame is you. But like David, you're living in denial. And do you have a personal history? Something you carry around with you. Goes with you wherever you go. And you wish you could turn back the clock. You wish you hadn't done what you did. You hadn't said what you said. Sometimes that personal history is like a dead weight on you. But is it your personal history that's weighing heavily upon you? Or is it God's hand? For day and night, your hand was heavy upon me. But like David, it's just getting heavier because you're living in denial. And maybe you're not what you were. And Christian friend, while you might have been bearing fruit by the armful, your spiritual life has now become something small and mean and thin and dying. And in spiritual terms, you've lost weight. You've lived off the fat of yesterday's blessings for too long. My vitality was turned into the drought of summer. But like David, you're living in denial. There's a stubbornness. When I kept silent, David, yes, but look in the mirror. Can you see yourself? Are those things a description of you? Are you like David? But how did David put things right? Well, you can read about it later through the prophet Nathan. God comes and meets with David. He outs David's dirty secret. And David does what he should have done a long, long time ago. Verse 3, he says, when I kept silent, it was then that my vitality was turned into the drought of summer. It was then that your hand was heavy upon me. It was then that I had this spiritual arthritis, when I kept it bottled up, when I remained silent. So now it's time to speak. Verse 5. I acknowledged my sin to you, and my iniquity I have not hidden. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord. So he does. David comes clean. He tells God everything. He confesses it all. What does he discover? Verse 5. And you forgave the iniquity of my sin. He discovers the calm of sins forgiven. David no longer keeps silent. He goes to God. He speaks to God. He confesses his sin. David didn't say it was sexual desire. He says, Lord, it was sinful desire. And though the landscape is scattered with the wreckage of broken lives and broken relationships, you can read about Psalm 51. David says, Lord, against you, you only have I sinned and done this evil in your sight. And though maybe for 9 months David's been worrying about his reputation, I've got to cover it up. What will people think? What will people say? Now the only thing that matters to him is, Lord, what do you say? Nothing else matters. I've got to come to you. I've got to speak to you. I've got to confess it. And hating his sin, David comes clean. He tells God everything. Have you done that? You groaning? Is there a weight upon you? Are you not the person you once were? Have you owned up? I acknowledged my sin to you. Have you given God a straight answer? And my iniquity I have not hidden. Have you come and confessed to God what you've done? I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord. The only way to put things right. And David should know. Or maybe someone's thinking, well, hang on a minute. That's all very well. But after what David's done, taking another man's wife, to cover his tracks, had that man murdered. That's all very well, you're saying, this man's forgiven. How can God let him off? My friend, God's blessings rest on sinners because of something God himself has done. Jesus, God's Son, went to a cross. If David's transgressions are lifted from him, it is because those transgressions were placed on Jesus. If David's sin was dealt with, it's because another took the blame. If David's iniquity wasn't charged to him, it is because it was charged to Jesus Christ. And therefore, when God came to punish the guilty, it was Jesus who took the blame. And justice was done. And the sinner is freed. God met the full cost of David's forgiveness himself. And that sin was washed away in the blood of his Son. This is why every sinner who comes clean and falls on the arms of Jesus may discover the happiness of sins forgiven. Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven. Well, point one was real happiness, verses 1 and 2. We've looked at verses 3 to 5, putting it right. The third point is this, verses 6 to 11. We'll call it the happy life. Because, my friend, on the other side of that door marked forgiveness, you'll find three things. The first thing you'll find is safety. Look at verses 6 and 7. For this cause, everyone who is godly shall pray to you in a time when you may be found. Surely in a flood of great waters they shall not come near him. You are my hiding place. You shall preserve me from trouble. You shall surround me with songs of deliverance. Surely in a flood of great waters they shall not come near him. Now, what's the biggest flood you can think of? Sri Lanka? Melbourne? What about in the days of Noah? The greatest flood of them all, where there was nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. A flood of great waters. And it was God's judgment on a wicked humanity. Well, says David, in the judgment to come, in a flood of great waters, I'm safe. I'm a sinner saved from hell. Surely in a flood of great waters, they shall not come near him. I remember seeing a film of a woman and a child clinging to a treetop in Mozambique while the floodwaters raged below. And as they hung there, so a helicopter came into view. And it plucked her and her child to safety. Well, that's forgiveness. It's to be plucked to safety. It's to be carried high above the floodwaters of God's judgment. Are you safe? Have you gone through that door marked forgiveness? Or are you clinging to the treetop? And verse 7, you are my hiding place. You shall preserve me from trouble. During the American Civil War, there was a soldier by the name of Jehoiada Brewer, and he was killed. And as they went through his pockets, identifying him and finding out what he had, they found a poem that he'd written. It's a poem called My Hiding Place. You are my hiding place. It's got many verses. It's got 9 verses. These are the last 3 verses. Listen to what he wrote. Should storms of sevenfold thunder roll, shake the globe from pole to pole, no flaming bolt could daunt my face, for Jesus is my hiding place. On him almighty vengeance fell, that would have sunk a world to hell. He bore it for the chosen race and thus became their hiding place. A few more rolling suns at most will land me on fair Canaan's coast, when I shall sing this song of grace and see my glorious hiding place. He died a forgiven man. He died in Jesus, safe in Jesus. When God comes to punish the guilty, when you stand in the judgment, my friend, will you have a hiding place in that day? And look at verse 7, the end of verse 7. You shall surround me with songs of deliverance. God has made his people a singing people. He's put a new song in their mouth. In Sri Lanka, when they're baptized in the sea, they come out of the waters like a sort of phalanx of people either side. And as they come out of the water, they've been baptized, to show they've been washed clean of their sins. And they come out to the sound of singing. The church gather around and sing and clap their hands. A great throng singing, rejoicing, songs of deliverance. Here's our brother, here's our sister. They were a sinner. They were under the anger of God. They were condemned, but now they're forgiven. And Jesus did it all. Songs of deliverance. What do we sing? We're here a second time, a third time. Tim told us at the beginning. We sang it. My sin, oh, the bliss of this glorious thought. My sin, not in part, but the whole, is nailed to his cross, and I bear it no more. Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord, oh, my soul. You shall surround me with songs of deliverance. Through that door is safety. My friend, are you safe? Have you been delivered? Are you forgiven? And beyond forgiveness, secondly, you'll find a relationship, or in David's case, it's a relationship restored, isn't it? God himself now speaks, verses 8 and 9, I will instruct you and teach you, this is God speaking, in the way you should go. I will guide you with my eye. Do not be like the horse or like the mule, which have no understanding, which must be harnessed with bit and bridle, else they will not come near you. What's God saying? He's saying, David, in those months of denial, you are no smarter than a horse or a mule. Now, sometimes on a Monday I go for a walk in Buckinghamshire. I do a little circuit, a couple of miles or so. And I pass a field, and in the field are horses. And I call to the horses. And sometimes they come over. I like horses. You can pat them, have a chat with them. If you blow on their nostrils, they're usually quite responsive. So sometimes you can call them over. But sometimes I'm standing there calling to the horses, and they completely ignore me. In fact, sometimes if I make a noise, they go off to a further part of the field. And for 9 months, God has been calling to David. But like a headstrong horse, he's either been ignoring God, or when he hears God's voice, goes further away. Or he's like a stubborn mule, isn't he? You know what a mule is? Digs his heels in. And that's been David. He's dug his heels in as God has been speaking to him to deal with his sin. He's dug his heels in. He's been a stubborn mule. He's refused to come. Until God has had to come to him with a bit and a bridle and put it on him and drag him near. What says God to David? Never, never again. Do not be like the horse or like the mule which have no understanding, which must be harnessed with bit and bridle, else they will not come near. No, David, it's not to be like that. We're father and son. Verse 8, I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will guide you with my eye, with a look, and nothing more, just with an eye. A father can reassure a child. Or a father can just look at a child, and the child knows they're not to do it. It's wrong, and they'll stop in their tracks. And those who God forgives, they have a relationship with him. No longer a headstrong horse or a stubborn mule. It's the relationship of a child with a father. And there's love and intimacy and the enjoyment of God. And there's trust. Trust in the way he leads, in the way he guides. The child is looking to the father's face. And he guides me with his eye. He gently leads me. So in this room, there are two sorts of people, aren't there? There are the children of God. They trust, they obey, they live as forgiven people. They're guided by God's eye. Or am I like a horse, proud, ready to gallop away? Am I like a stubborn mule, digging in my heels? Am I, as God says, someone who has no understanding? Because I will not come to God to be forgiven. Well, on the other side of that door marked forgiveness, you'll find something else. You'll find joy. We've come full circle, haven't we, as we look at verses 10 and 11. Many sorrows shall be to the wicked, but he who trusts in the Lord, mercy shall surround him. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous, and shout for joy, all you upright in heart. It's a wonderful thing, the joy of sins forgiven. The delight, the pleasure, the wonder of being right with God. And as David pens his psalm, you can hear him thinking, why did I make it hard on myself? Many sorrows shall be to the wicked. That's all you get. Sorrows, grief, tears. But he who trusts in the Lord, mercy shall surround him. It's that word mercy, we've come across it before. It's God's, it's not a very good translation, is it? Mercy sounds something rather cold. It's God's wonderful, invincible, unchanging love. He sets his love upon someone and he will never let them go. And says David, you never let me go. You never took your eye off me. I wandered far, but God was faithful. And now he's brought me home again. He's brought me home again into the embrace of his love. Why ever, ever, ever did I go away? that night when I saw Bathsheba. And there's a pleasure there, of course there's a pleasure there, the pleasures of sin. But however could I fall and for it? The pleasures of God are infinitely sweeter. So David says, come on, come and I'm a forgiven man. Come and join me, all you who know God's forgiveness, all you who have found this joy of being right with God. Come and join me in the chorus. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous, and shout for joy, all you upright in heart. When I read those words, I always think of Alan Gardner, marooned on the tip of South America in 1851, went to take the gospel to the people there. He was a lover of Jesus Christ, and there he was, battered by Atlantic gales, weakened by cold and disease, without food, without water, no prospect of rescue, and he's slowly dying. And we know this dying man's thoughts because he wrote them down. He wrote them down in his journal. And what are his final words? They're hard to decipher. He's a dying man. Almost all the life has gone from him. But what does he say? What are this man's final words to leave to this world? Marvelous kindness to me, a sinner. Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven. He dies a happy man. It's time to close. We've opened up the psalm. We spoke about the joy of sins forgiven, but we've actually left out half a verse. Did you see it? Did you spot it? Look at verse 2 again. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. What does David mean? Who had he been deceiving? He'd been deceiving himself. He's guilty, but he's in denial. There's been deceit. Deceit in his spirit, but he's been deceiving himself. Christian friend, I want to talk to the Christians here. David is a believer. So Christian friend, is that you? Are you living in denial? Is there something in your life and you are not being straight with God? You will not bring it to God. You will not pray about it. You will not confess it to God. And you're in denial. You say, it's not my problem, it's their problem. It's the way I was brought up. Well, you've got to understand things have been difficult recently. Well, you would have done the same. I had no alternative. I take after my father. It's a sort of family trait. It's just the way that I am. Look, there are far worse things. Other people have done far worse things than I've done. So why are you picking on me? What will people say? I can't come clean. What will people say? And maybe if things are making your sin feel uncomfortable, if there was no comeback, if you really could get away with it, if you could keep it a secret, would you carry on? Do you hate your sin? Are you deceiving yourself? Maybe, my friend, that's why God's hand is heavy upon you. Maybe, my friend, that's why in the Christian life you've been very scratchy, haven't you? Very cranky, very with other people, you know? There's a sharpness and a looking sideways. And actually what the real cause is spiritual arthritis. Something's not right. You're not putting it right with God. And for all the cleverness of the way you resolve it in your mind, God says you're just like a brute beast that has no understanding. And maybe you've carried on reading your Bible and you continue to pray, but it's a joyless Christianity, isn't it? It's bereft of the joy of the Lord. When did you last sing and dance in your heart for joy? Because you knew you were forgiven and loved of God, and Christ was everything to you. And you're beginning to taste, aren't you, what David found? Many sorrows shall be to the wicked. And God says to you tonight, why are you keeping away? And it's been in your Christian life for years, and the weight is getting heavier, but you're keeping away. You're not giving God a straight answer in this area. You can talk about the 99% of other things, but this thing. And God cannot get a straight answer from you. Jesus says, did I do all that for you? For you now to close your heart to me. Are you a proud, headstrong horse going my way? Are you just a stubborn mule? That's all you are. Well, you're really a child of God. He can guide you with his eye. Gentle words and gentle looks are all that you need, because he's everything to you. Christian friend, are you living in denial? Are you? Well, you know what to do, don't you? David spoke to himself, I acknowledge my sin to you. He spoke to God, and my iniquity I have not hidden. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord. That's what you need to do. And you forgave the iniquity of my sin. But as we close, my friend, if you're not a believer, what has this psalm said to you? It says you've gone your own way, haven't you? And you have. You're guilty of transgression. It says you've fallen short of God's commands. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. That's you. You're a sinner. And again, you have never given God a straight answer, have you? It's iniquity. There's something twisted about you. You're not straight. And therefore, says this word, you are condemned. At the judgment day, you'll have no excuse. You're on a collision course with God's anger. And hell is more real than you dare think. Many sorrows shall be to the wicked. Because if you die unforgiven, there's no remedy. And God will punish you forever. And you will weep endless tears. Many sorrows. But God is near. He's brought you here tonight. He's brought you tonight to hear his word. It's God, you see, who spans the gulf. He comes to us, isn't he? He's gracious, kind, loving. He would woo us. He would win us. He would draw us to himself. And he's ready to hear you. So speak to him. What does David say? For this cause, everyone who is godly, everyone who wants God, shall pray to you in a time when you may be found. Such a time as now. You can find God tonight. Maybe he's been waiting to hear your voice for so long. Waiting for you to speak to him, to call on his name. So my friend, come. Come to the place of forgiveness. Come to the cross. Come to Jesus Christ. It's the place where burdens are lifted. Where sins are taken away. Tonight, fall upon the kind arms of Jesus. God, be merciful to me, a sinner.